Welcome to this, the One White Woman podcast. My name is Nene White, and I am finally waking up to the fact that it's up to me and other so-called white people to examine our woefully incomplete knowledge of history and current realities so that we are better able to contribute to, in whatever ways feel most right for each of us, to practical and constructive solutions that will move all of us as Americans permanently forward for the benefit of all of us together. Today's conversation is with Ashley Scott, a realtor and visionary entrepreneur. Ashley is a fireball of positive, practical, and constructive energy, and she's dedicated to creating a safe future characterized by fully realized potentials for her family, her friends' families, and all future generations of Black families in America. Towards the end of Ashley's and my conversation, the connection got a little wobbly, but I hope you'll listen all the way through, and then I very much hope you'll check this show's notes for links to the sites Ashley shared with us. Thank you again and again for being here and learning with me. Ashley Scott, I think you do not know how much you have changed my life, what an impact you've had on my life. I was roaming around on the internet trying to learn and, you know, get not so clueless about what life is like in America for Black people. And I saw this little headline, and I know a lot of people have told you this, I'm sure, because I've talked to a lot of people. 19 families have bought 97 acres in Georgia. And I thought, what is that? And so you are the realtor that brought this whole thing together. So I want to hear about that and from your perspective.
Yeah, so we, as friends and family first, I have always been a realtor and I've been a realtor for 3 years. I've always been an entrepreneur and I've always been really into this idea of creating generational wealth for my family and leaving a legacy. That's just kind of something that's ingrained into me from being a historically Black college attendee and graduate. And then just really having this strong Christian upbringing. So wanting to get my friends and my family together to buy this land was like a solution that, as a realtor, like, what can I do that was real practical when everybody was out there protesting and people were, you know, really complaining a lot, to be honest. That's how I felt.
Right. I mean, you have to identify the problems, but then let's move it on.
The solutions. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm just like, how can we practically solve something that no one has solved? You know, like, we've been dealing with this issue of systemic oppression and racism. Our parents, you know, for generations have been dealing with the systemic barriers to being able to generate wealth. And when I did my own independent studies and my own research, because I didn't get taught a lot of the things that I know in college, I found out that generational wealth and wealth in general is made through home ownership and land ownership and business ownership. Rich dad, poor dad teaches us that you, to really be able to have financial independence and economic independence, you can't just be an employee. You can't even just be a self-employed business owner. You have to move into the realm of a investor and a big business owner. But if you can't create revenue streams and access capital, if you can't access banking, you can't create those streams of income for yourself that sets up generational wealth. And that's really what all of my goals and all of my conversation is ever about. Because when we look at the statistics, we see that Black families earn 13 cents to the dollar compared to white families when it comes to their wealth that they own. 13 cents to the dollar. And so we have to look at, okay, well, why is that? Well, home ownership is a real big reason for that. There were practices like redlining that allowed banks to systemically charge higher interest rates in certain zip codes. And those certain zip codes were areas where Black families live. And there were incentives that the Federal Housing Administration put in place so that white families could have buy in the suburban areas outside of those ghettos and urban communities that Black families did not have access to. So when you have something just like that, an actual fact that anybody can go research on their own right now today, as a real estate agent, that's why I got started. That's why I said to my friends, to my family, like, hey, there's some land that together we can collectively afford and we can build houses together. And in that community, we can start to have some wealth for our children. And who better to build wealth with than the people you love, you know, the people who even the family you pick, you know, your friends, the ones who are destined to be with you and on this journey of life with you. And so that's what we did. Myself and Renee Walters, my president of the Freedom Georgia Initiative, she is our co-founder. And she said, hey, sis, let's get 10 of my friends. Let's get 10 of your friends. And together, let's build our own little community. And so that was just the impetus. And what's grown since then is this desire to really, you know, build this municipality, because for us, that's the solution to systemic oppression, is to change the system, change the foundations, the governments and the structures, the judges, the people who make these programs. Like, we have to really start cultivating some programs that are specifically going to benefit Black people, because Black people have the most disparities and challenges that any small disadvantaged minority population faces here in America. And so, being as though America is my home, our home, we have the right to utilize the laws to start to create a replicatable model, a municipal corporation that solves the challenges that Black people are enduring. Because if we don't do it, if we don't start being aggressive and unifying and determining for ourselves the best programs, the best methods for building our community in a positive way, and frameworks that can start to decrease the disparities and increase positive outcomes, then we can't expect anybody else to do it.
Right. And I saw a quote of yours that Black folks are looking for ways to address the issues that government will not address. And it has to be said that government will not. It's not just that they're not. It's that they will not, because they could if they had the will. And absolutely. So to be complaining about that, or, you know, lamenting it, or you are a woman of action. That's why I absolutely had to talk to you.
Thank you.
I love your energy. And when I watched that webinar or whatever it was, when you were talking with that group of people in that panel about Freedom Georgia.
Earn Your Leisure.
Earn Your Leisure. There were so, and we should put that website in the notes.
Please, Earn Your Leisure. Shout out to Troy and Rashad. They are an amazing podcast too. And one of the number one podcasts, the biggest and the best university for entrepreneurship and earning for your future financial freedom and financial independence. I just love Earn Your Leisure. Earn Your Leisure today. You guys go check it out.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I know it's so, just even in that word, you know, earn your leisure. It's just such a beautiful mindset. Okay, now that was too long. I lost the thread.
Don't worry. You're doing good.
Oh, I know what it was. It was when I was watching you, and the amount of detail and the amount of details that are involved with creating this community was just mind-boggling. And the way you're just going like this and you're so clear on everything, I just had such admiration for that. So I want to hear about some of the issues that you're dealing with, like environmental. I was so happy for you to really prioritize that one. And then I want to know how much cooperation or resistance you're getting from the state of Georgia or whoever you have to be dealing which I have no idea about.
Yeah. So right now we're very early in our process.
Yeah.
And we are really dealing on the county level right now. Okay. And the county of Wilkinson County is super supportive of what it is we're doing. So it's really exciting to be a part of a community that understands the need for rural revitalization. Yes. Because what they're dealing with is people are leaving that area, this rural community, and they don't come back. They go to the big cities for jobs and for housing opportunities. And we don't realize affordable housing is a big issue in America right now.
Yeah.
People do not have access to a home that they can afford because they just aren't building them fast enough. Right. And our inventory is super low compared to our general population. Mm-hmm. So we have to look at all of the climate crises that's making people relocate. People are losing their homes in California and in other places where there are so many wildfires. There's just lots of reasons why people are having to relocate and we don't have enough housing. So Wilkinson County is, you know, wanting to be innovative. They want to be on the cutting edge and they want to have a reason to bring new residents to the community and keep and encourage their existing residents because they don't want people to leave Wilkinson County looking for better opportunities. So they're very interested in our project and super supportive. We haven't made it to the state level quite yet because we're still trying to access capital. And that's a challenge. And that's the biggest challenge that we face at the moment.
Okay, so a couple of questions that don't seem to be related, but one I need to ask is, are the Wilkinson County decision makers, are they white mostly or Black, or is it a good mix? Or, I mean, I'm just always curious about that, how much resistance is coming from that color divide that we all know is so false. But
yeah,
the other one is, okay, go ahead, answer that question.
Mm-hmm. So what we have found is that the county is pretty mixed. It is in the county about 50-50 Black and white. And then in certain areas, there's different cities. There's seven different cities. Okay. In those seven different cities, two or so of them have white mayors. And then we have Black mayors in other cities within the Wilkinson County. There's an African-American county manager. And then there's commissioners that represent each of the districts that make up the county. And one of the commissioners, the seats are not currently filled. And the other four commissioners, three are African-American and one is white. And the one in our district is a white American. And I will tell you this, he has not shown any resistance to this idea. But he has been very clear that he doesn't like the idea of us talking about a Black community. He wants us to talk about inclusion and wanting to make sure that everybody feels safe being in this community. He doesn't want us to shut out or disclude the white people who do currently live in the county and in that area. And we don't want to make them feel excluded or uncomfortable or unsafe in any way. Us owning land and building this movement, our goal is for Black people in particularly to be able to feel safe and peace and protection, but not at the expense of someone else. And it's really sad that people assume that if we're going to talk about Black self-determination, that it has to be at the expense of white Americans, because it doesn't.
That might have to do with the fact that that's the game that white people played for way too long. But it's one thing that is just constantly a source of deepest admiration and awe, really, is that I really don't see that revenge thing from African Americans that are looking for constructive solutions. Consistently, I don't. Consistently. And it just, you know, I mean, I'm not afraid, you know, but when I hear that people are afraid, you know, I just wish that they could meet all the good people that are just intelligent and just want to live their lives on their own terms.
Yeah.
Is that absolutely asking too much? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not. It's definitely not asking too much. I just think that we have to have higher level conversations. And that's what we're doing today, Nini. Yeah. When we get the chance to engage in a discourse like this, it makes people say, you know what? Maybe I am too fear. Because the reality is, we know all the things that white Americans, and not all white Americans, but a group of terroristic, domestic terrorists that constantly trample on the lives and livelihoods of Black Americans, that group of people, we definitely are afraid of them more than any of the other people in America should be afraid of us.
I'm afraid of those people. I'm afraid of those.
Like, that's really the, and we have been the victim of this racial terrorism since we have come to this country. So while your thoughts of revenge are steeped in the realization and reality that we as Black Americans have been more terrorized and have experienced more trauma, we should be the ones who are afraid every day. And we're telling people alarm signs. This is it. We are creating safe spaces and communities and waving the white flag saying, hey, enough is enough.
Yeah.
Time to act is now. We have all kinds of bills and legislation that need to be passed because we are scared. Now, and it's fair for us to have that fear when you look at the history of the domestic terrorism that Black Americans have faced from
and are
Black
facing people. Today.
That's just even today, meaning even today.
It's... I don't know how you live with it. I do not know how you live with it and function at such a high level of integrity and genuine connection within your community and with others that are on the same page with you. I trip over my words when I think about it because it's, you expand what I think of as human capacity, to tell you the truth, if that isn't sounding like too much, but that is actually my experience with you and the people that I have met because of you, because of that webinar that you were on with the Your Leisure people, because then I got involved with the Black Achievement Fund.
Yes, thank you.
And met, well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we will challenge you. We are easy. We're not an easy bunch of people to just come in and sit at the table with us and on those Zooms. And we love on you, but we tell you how we really feel. And you sit there, you hear it, you know, and really genuinely experience our culture and what we're doing. And we're healing together in the village, in our ambassador programs, when we have our weekly and monthly meetings. These are opportunities for us to have safe spaces, and you're welcome. And it's still safe even when you are there, because you are there in a spirit of genuine allyship. So we thank you for that.
Oh, I have totally experienced that. And I came in like, hello. But yeah, it's just, you build trust over time, of course, you know, and you build self-trust too. And you find out who you are in these new challenging experiences. But I have, of course, white friends who I've told about this, and I'm just so excited. And they just go, oh, I'm so happy for you.
I wish you guys could see the Zoom, because she just patted her head and like, yes.
And it's just like, but you're a good person. You care. What, you know, so, you know, we all have to live our own lives and we all have our priorities and we're all doing the best that we know how. And I mean that, I understand that. But what would you like to see white people doing more if they can feel that they can only go so far or do so much? What would you like to see?
I hate to say it this way, but cut a check and don't keep giving to the Cancer Society, the American Cancer Society, and these white philanthropic corporations and entities that don't serve Black people, because our problem, and I'm going to say it and I'm going to say it over and over again, because all of us are saying it to you and I don't think people are hearing it. Our problem is access to capital. That's the bottom line. Yeah. So if you're not going to do nothing else, at least write the check and make sure that the people who work in the jobs next to you and beside you are getting equal pay.
Yeah.
Be an advocate for that. Don't just be like, oh, let me not tell anybody how much I make. No, sometimes it's good to tell somebody how much you make because you don't know how that can change the life and trajectory of an entire family. Mm-hmm. Somebody making $2 or $3 extra or more an hour than what they are currently making could change the trajectory of their children's lives, mm-hmm. whether or not they get to go to college. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they get to start a business. Mm-hmm. And so we don't see how the ramifications of that type of thing happens. But if you don't say anything, if you don't speak up, if you're not an advocate, and if we don't cut those reparation checks, like everybody wants to act like, oh, we don't need to talk about cash reparations. We have to have conversations about cash reparations and access to capital, because at the end of the day, the numbers don't lie. And when we look at even these veiled statements from our own current administration about wanting to put $100 million into the hands of small and medium-sized businesses, that's not a Black specific solution. And Black people have Black specific problems.
Yes.
And so we need people who are willing to invest in the Black businesses on Start Engine and on Buy the Block and on the GoFundMe pages. We need you to stroke a check. And I hate to make it seem like it's only about money, but money is our biggest problem. Because when we look at how this country was founded, how it became the leader of the world and the economic giant that it is,
yeah.
It's because of us and our free labor,
right,
that allowed white capitalists to create the most successful experiment in socialism and government of all time, right? Mm-hmm. Like you, a small group, a 1% group of really wealthy white men are really benefiting very strongly off the backs of the Black bodies that came here against their will and the Native Americans whose land they stole.
Right.
And
these are
like,
facts.
These are facts
that are hard to look at.
Yeah.
But there's something where, like, I heard that for a long time and it didn't get past, and I'm just being real because that's the only way that really we move forward. It just didn't get past all of the messages that I had received that were very negative about the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
And George Floyd had to die in front of my eyes for me to see that Chauvin, the cop, and his total inhumanity and self-justification. It represented the whole history. It represented the whole history. And somehow or another, I want to encourage people that are white and not affected by the harsh aspects of the history of this country to really let themselves have some quiet time to really think about the realities of why this country is the number one in all the ways that it's number one. And but then when you're talking about money, then what I get a concern about is that, you know, you can't just give people money because, you know, that's like winning the lottery and then there it's gone in a year. So what kind of specific things are you thinking where it would be, you know, funneled into or directed and used, you know, channeled most wisely? What are your thoughts and what are other thoughts that you've heard?
Well, most of us want to see it go to the hands of Black leaders in movements that are already working and showing success. So like, for instance, I've got to talk about the Freedom Georgia Initiative. I would talk about the Black Achievement Fund and not these trendy things, but like I said, actual Black entrepreneurs, people who are starting businesses and need access to capital. There's so many like economic infrastructure and economic independence. If we were to get a reparations check, let's just like you said, tomorrow, it would be gone. Know why? Because in our communities where Black people currently reside, we don't typically own the houses. And if you do own the house, you probably have a mortgage. And so even if they gave us, let's just say they gave us the same amount they gave on a stimulus check, $1,400. Well, we know where that went to. It went right directly back into the rents and the mortgages that people had to pay first and foremost. And so that means that money goes right back out of our hands right. and into financial institutions right. and into the hands of other utility providers.
As opposed Again, to you want it to be recirculating.
It needs to be recirculating.
In the Black community.
In the Black community. And it has to have ownership. We have to have ownership in the land. We have to have ownership in the businesses that serve the community. We should have, at this point in the world, we should be looking at renewable energy sources, and we should be having community energy. And we should be able to know that we aren't spending money on basic needs at this point, because we are just too far of a developed community and country that we aren't being better stewards of our resources. Yeah. And so we don't want to encourage people to keep giving money to institutions that have not shown any real change. We need for people to be able to jump out on faith and start investing in younger people, in women-owned businesses, in Black-owned businesses. So it might not look like giving to the United Negro College Fund, or do give to the United Negro College Fund. Give to Tom Joyner, because a lot of people aren't giving to those types of entities. But that's what we need, because if your dollar went back into historically Black colleges and universities, it's going back into a system and an infrastructure that is owned and ran by Black leadership. And that's the kind of things that we want to do. We want to create communities. We want to create corporations. We want to create businesses that we can pass down infrastructure that we own as a community, because that's going to be how we have financial independence. And that's how we move the needle, so that we can say, you know what? We have 100 million Black millionaires now, instead of living under the poverty line, which is what we're seeing so far. So our goal is to just encourage people to go a step further, do a little research, and find out what smaller grassroots organizations are out there. Don't just keep jumping on the trends. Not to say like Black Lives Matter is cool. They're a great organization. You can give to them. You can give to the Until Freedom Fund. You can give to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. But take the time to do some research and give your money to a organization that could really get a lot of impact from your small gift. Because when you give your $100 to the American Cancer Society, it's not making the same impact that your $100 would make if you gave it to a small business owner or supported a local nonprofit organization that's being run by people of color.
Yeah. Well, what I would ask of you for the show's notes is for you to do that vetting for any of the white people that are listening, so that they can see what you think. You know, give a selection of organizations and maybe a little bit about why, or I would take notes from you and I would do the research. But
Well, our organization is the one, meaning that we want them to come and give their dollars to the Black Achievement Fund and to the Freedom Georgia Initiative.
Good. I think those are the best that I have found, that are the most practical and feet on the ground and with the brightest people that are just so positive and constructive and stay on that positive, constructive track.
That's right. Absolutely.
Good. So what else can you tell us about, or how excited are you? When do you think you're going to be able to start building out there in Freedom Georgia?
Yeah. So right now, I don't want to harp on it, but we're in a fundraising mode. So we're raising $500,000 in the next 21 days through our GoFundMe campaign at freedomfund21.com. It'll take you directly to our website and our GoFundMe page. That's freedomfund21.com, the numbers. And Freedom Fund 21 is our campaign. You can hashtag that, hashtag Freedom Fund 21 on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And what we're doing is we're in this new age, right? Everybody's been talking about like NFTs, and we've watched people, we've been very inspired by like Nipsey Hussle and like Toby Nwigwe. These are, you know, Black rappers. So take some time. You'll like Toby Nwigwe if you take the time to go check him out. He's a really great artist.
Spell that.
T-O-B-E space N-W. I-G-W-E, Toby Nwigwe. He's a wonderful hip hop artist, super phenomenal family man that is leading a Black renaissance. So we wanted to kind of take this cue because it's been about 100 years since the Tulsa bombings and 100 years since Harlem Renaissance was moving and swinging in Harlem. And so we want to honor the spirit because it does feel like this renewed energy that Black folks are just out here really changing the status quo, right?
Yeah.
And so we wanted to be a part of that. So there's some folks who like dropped a mixtape that was like $200 mixtape. So we're taking that model. So we're dropping a $250 collector's shirt, a t-shirt, and a NFT digital art. So you'll get this t-shirt and this digital art, and it's going to be in commemoration of our pioneers and our freedom funders who are helping us to build Freedom Georgia. So we're really excited to talk about this Freedom Fund and raise this $500,000. We need at least, I mean, we want more than $500,000, obviously, because it'll help us with all of our municipality building. Because to be perfectly honest, when this is all said and done, we're going to spend about $1 billion on the infrastructure and the buildings and all of the roads and the plumbing and the rainwater runoff systems. And it's so much to plan an entire master planned community. And then we've got amazing Black architects and designers, and we've got women architects and women designers. We've got people who are going to create and launch apprentice programs and women in construction training programs that will be in place as we build this entire community. So there's so many levels of how we anticipate being able to impact people's lives with this project. Mm-hmm. And the $500,000 is our first kind of financial phase that we need to raise so that we can get all of the master planning done, so we can then start selling plots and building EMS and fire stations and all that stuff. We can't do any of that until we get the basic civil engineering and surveying and design completed. And that's what that $500,000 we're fundraising is going to help us do. And what we are hoping is that people will buy a $250 t-shirt, collector's item, and NFT, a non-fungible token of art. So an NFT is this really cool thing that everybody's talking about, Grant Cardone. And if you're into Silicon Valley and tech stuff, NFT is like the wave of the future. It's created on the blockchain, and it's a way to authenticate an original piece of art, digital renderings, music, whatever. And you can sell it and you can buy it using crypto. We'll either be using Ethereum more than likely. But in any case, you're going to get this t-shirt and this NFT that's only exclusively for the people who help us raise this 500K for the Freedom Fund 21. So we're really excited about that. And some of the other things that we have coming down the pipeline are our Juneteenth celebration. Juneteenth is when Black Americans living in Galveston, Texas, heard for the very first time that the Emancipation Proclamation had made them officially free. Union soldiers had made it there and announced to the people, and they celebrated in the same style that we celebrate today, all of our holidays with dancing, food. I'm sure if they had fireworks, then they went off. So that is what we will be doing on Juneteenth, June 18th, June 19th, and June 20th. I'm sorry, June 19th, June 20th, and June 21st, which is our Juneteenth camp out. It also falls on Father's Day weekend. We'll be doing a Father's Day ceremony, honoring our Black fathers, because there's so many negative connotations out there that Black fathers aren't taking care of their children, and it's just not true. And we want to be able to celebrate them and to always challenge those stereotypes, you know, and create a new narrative for ourselves. And so Juneteenth is a chance for us to come together along with our allies. As always,
I'll be there.
You will be there.
Absolutely. I've got my tent and everything all packed.
And so Juneteenth is our big celebration. And if you hear this podcast afterwards, just know that it was an amazing celebration on 502 acres of Black owned land.
What happened to your sound?
I don't know.
It got weird.
I don't know. Maybe my children, I hear some new music. Is it better now?
A little bit better.
Okay.
Juneteenth.
So on Juneteenth, it will be an amazing celebration. We'll have the 19 Black families that purchased the land. We're doing a panel, and we'll talk about why you're doing what you're doing and how, and answer questions and get to know folks. There will be vendors there. I've got an extensive list of amazing Black businesses, and I want to shout out the Reparations Project. That's another organization that you can definitely give to. They're one of our sponsors for the Juneteenth celebration for the BAF's third birthday in Freedom, Georgia. So shout out to the Reparations Project. You can go to reparationsproject.org to find out more about them. They are on they have an amazing story. I'm not even going to try to tell their story, but check out the Reparations Project because they're doing great work too. People are doing their very best. It's a white woman whose family owned Black slaves, and the descendant of that slave owner and the descendant of those slaves have a land dispute because the ancestors gave some of the land to the slave family, and their descendants want that land back. And so they're working together to rectify the fact that this land was stolen from that family and their descendants. And so those kinds of projects, people are doing amazing things all over the world.
It's so important for all of us to hear that kind of, the sound has really gone wonky for some reason.
I don't know.
I know.
Maybe.
No.
Maybe I just need to talk louder.
No, it's gotten very, it's very weird now. You'll see when I play it back for you.
Okay. Well, I'm done.
All right. Well, it happened at an okay time, but oh my gosh, what an upper. You are an upper, Ashley. Good. Oh my gosh. Thank you. I'm going to want you to, if you think of any other organizations or anything else to put in the show's notes, please send that to me right away. Okay.
Okay. Sure thing.
I'll try to get this uploaded, within the next day or so. So.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Absolutely.
I will go ahead and send you this stuff because the main things that I want to highlight is us.
Yes.
The Black Achievement Fund and freedomfund21.com. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
And then, like I said, the Reparations Project is pretty cool.
Yeah, I got it.
That's it. I don't really have anybody else that I would recommend right now.
Yeah, let's just stay focused. Yeah, good. Good. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Ashley. I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Wait,
neither can I. All right.
All right. Love you, lady. Talk to you soon. Time.
Yes. Okay. Bye. Bye.
Please check this show's notes for information and links to the sites and resources Ashley told us about. And as always, thank you for being here, sharing this learning journey with me. We have come a long way in our understanding. Yet we need to remain open to how very, very much more we need to learn and understand so we can consciously be part of the solutions rather than unconsciously continuing to be part of the multi-layered challenges caused by systemic racism in America. Thank you again for your time and your attention.